How can I help you?
Hi, I'm calling to book a women's haircut for a client. I'm looking for something on May 3rd.
Sure, give me 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, what time are you looking for around?
So what was that?
That was an artificially intelligent entity interacting in a very specific domain with a human being, ostensibly without the human being aware that they were speaking with an artificial entity.
And why do you think that's so significant?
I think it's significant because it's very impressive to see how far these systems have come in terms of mimicking human behavior, sounding natural, sounding conversational. I also think it's notable, and it was noticed by many people, that the human being on the other end wasn't aware that they were speaking with this entity. So it's one thing to interact with the natural sounding voice user interface or an assistant that you're aware of. You're given the opportunity to suspend disbelief. In this instance, that opportunity was not there, so that the person on the other end wasn't aware of it at all. I think that's the notable part. You know, we're at a point now where most people understand the implications behind AI. We live with it. We interact with these systems in our daily lives. So we know. So when you hear a voice like that talking about setting something up, a haircut, it's impressive and frightening.
Today, I'm excited to welcome David Vasquez to the show. I'll let him introduce himself in a minute, but as you may have gathered from our early exchange, we're going to be talking about text-to-speech and what it takes to make an effective text-to-speech system like the Google Duplex example we just heard. Text-to-speech has been around for a long time, which is probably why we accept that it sounds kind of crappy. But these days, it's improving at such a rapid pace that getting it right is going to be critical to keeping customers happy. Today, we'll be talking about how to do that and what CEOs need to be thinking about to deploy text-to-speech technology. Plus, we'll hear from David about where he sees this technology going in the future. I should also point out that since we recorded this conversation, Google has announced that it is addressing the issue you heard David raise a minute ago about whether Duplex ought to identify itself as a bot. It's now starting every conversation by introducing itself as Google's automated booking service. And in response to privacy concerns, it also immediately lets people know that it's recording the conversation too, since Google is using those calls to collect all kinds of interaction and conversational data. We've got a great show today, so stick around. I'm John Pryle, and welcome to the Impact Podcast. Hi, David. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, John. Nice to be here.
And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I'm a text-to-speech voice designer at Google. My background is in speech and audio interaction and language. I got my start about 15 years ago as a composer and a sound designer for educational games and toys for children. It was during that time that I became immersed in dialogue design and voice acting, and the intersection between voice and sound design and music.
So I'd like to go back to the clip and talk about what we heard. You know, what stood out for me was that this entity said, because it just seems so human. And the last thing I was expecting from a computer system is natural science. But you've been spending your life now around this technology. What did you hear?
Well, I definitely heard what I see as some of the most important pieces in now with voice interaction and with speaking with text-to-speech systems, and that was nonverbal cues that were predicated on understanding, real understanding, as opposed to just transcribing sounds into text, and perhaps an emotional connection. The kind of sort of interactions that we have with human beings when we're acknowledging what they're saying and we know that they're working with us on a problem or conversing with us. This, to me, told me the system understood what I was saying, was acknowledging it in a very human way through nonverbal cues. And the mm-hmms and the ahas are representative of that.
And you mentioned, and again, this was obviously just a demo, and you had mentioned that the person that was answering the phone at the hairdresser did not know that this was a, I'll still use the word entity. I feel like I'm in a Star Trek world. But you know, Google has since said they'll announce themselves as Google Assistant. And so to get rid of that creepy factor, which I think is probably the right answer. So as we go beyond Google Home and Amazon Echo, and I assume they will begin to interact with the users of the system as this entity did as well. So do you expect to see them evolve a little bit as they begin to add more of this natural level of communication, or do you think it'll be more of a command and response just for that as well?
I think it'll be more natural. I would say that the kind of work that I've been focused on and I'm focused on now at a high level is precisely to imbue these systems with more human qualities and to understand emotional response and to respond in a more emotional way. I think that that part is great. I think we want to continue doing that. I think what happens is that when you have Amazon systems and Siri systems and the Google Home and or the Google Assistant speaking to you, I think it's all fair game. I think it's actually, in my experience, the more these systems sound like human beings and can read books or can sound very natural and conversational, that I think that's all great, so long as you understand who you're interacting with.
I think we're on it. You and I are really talking through this journey that we're going to be going on as this technology just continues to evolve more and more. And I think there's two sides to this, and we have to think about how we have to know how humans choose to react and learn from that. And then we have to program these systems to react in a certain way as well. When I thought about how the device was, or the entity was reacting to the receptionist at the hair salon, it was how things were said. And I felt on both sides some empathy. And as you talk about being more and more human, so how does one begin to think about building a system that has a little more, or you build the words around empathy and the intonations around empathy? How does that kind of happen?
When you start talking about empathy with conversation and with speech, and this is what we're talking about here, it's really important to understand the intent of the user in interactions and being able to offer a response in the right, to simplify it, the right tone of voice. So when you're speaking with somebody and you're saying, well, you know, I want this book, or I want this book, or you put a little bit of emphasis, or maybe you raise your voice a little bit, or enunciate a bit more, or make your voice a little louder. All of these things convey a richness of information that could be considered empathy, or it could be considered just nonverbal emotional communication. And those are the things that are important to communicate in these synthesized voices. That is what has been lacking, obviously, because of technological constraints in the past, where we have just very robotic sounding, dull voices. The voices now that are sort of the product of the next generation of machine learning are capable of doing just those things and speaking as if there's a smile on their face. There's no face, but there's a smile.
That's a great analogy. I love that. I'm a big audiobook fan, and I did a lot of commuting in my early days and was just voracious in listening to books. And kind of the way I summarize what I'm listening is, I'm not listening to an actor read a book. I'm listening to an actor perform the book. I was feeling there were rich interpretations of the words, even having the same actor change voices when things were in quotes in the book and reading voices. Do you think we'll ever get to that point? How far away do you think we are from seeing that?
I don't know if I could put a timeline on it. I've been just blown away at the rate at which the audio output component to understanding, which is the voice and the experience of telling the story, has come so far. But that level of storytelling involves true human understanding, true comprehension, and the ability to understand what you're reading and how you want to communicate that to your audience. Thus far, those are purely human qualities. With audiobooks and storytelling, we're not anywhere necessarily close to having these systems understand what they're reading and understanding their audience, but we have to be able to have the voices that are reading those stories to you sound as if they did. And that part, that magic, is part of prosody. And there is an understanding. There is natural language processing and understanding where you understand parts of speech, where there are entities, named entities in the text that can be correlated to different components of that story or different components of the utterance being said. So there's an understanding, but that true human understanding, that spark of storytelling, that as the teller and as the receiver is so human, we're not there yet.
But that point about cheating is interesting, because I did hear, you know, the placement of a comma. It really does a lot in terms of how, and it does get interpreted well. When I listen to one with and without the comma, it's extremely different when I listened. And I know it's more of an academic exercise, perhaps, but the phrase that I read somewhere was, you know, don't desert me in the desert. If you don't get that right, you just lose the audience completely.
It's amazing how a couple of touches, yeah, just the proper intonation at the right word, the proper pause, understanding contrastive elements in a sentence, just simple things that are actually relatively straightforward to do with these systems, makes a huge difference in the consumption of that experience as a human, as the audience listening to these stories. I've listened to a few audiobooks through this, and I can say that I've enjoyed it, but it's not there yet.
So it's interesting. I hadn't thought about the comparison to voice recognition, because it's hard to measure if we had it right in terms of all these intonation and elements. I do know, I don't remember the number, but something like if you're only 93 or 94% accurate on voice recognition, the user won't use the system again. You got to get to 97 or 98 before a user uses the word recognition system constantly. At the flip side, this is on the other side. You don't have that unique a measurement. At the same time, if it doesn't work, they're not going to use it. So it's actually the same, almost the same story here.
Yes, it really is. Now there's tricks to that. Obviously, in the absence of that, you know, that sentient entity who can tell you this to read you your favorite audiobooks, there has to be ways to design that experience that people are still receiving the information, are still delighted by it, and are willing to listen. A project that I worked on when I was at Nuance was a newsreader, a TTS newsreader. It basically read you any web content that you chose, and you curated that content, and it served it up on a daily basis to you. And so, you know, one of the challenges we had was, how can we do this without just torturing the listener? Because at some point, you know, the systems that we were developing were pretty good, but they weren't as anywhere near what we have now. And so we thought, well, why don't we couch this in that narrative experience that we're all sort of as 21st century human beings accustomed to, which is the radio or the podcast experience. Why not put music underneath and have segues and you know, read the top of the article? And so we did that. And what we did was we had a music engine that would algorithmically create music themes underneath the stories, and using text analysis would generate music that was consistent with the tone of the article, whether it was upbeat or perhaps a bit more somber or neutral. And it would sort of couch that experience. And at least in theory, what we were doing was removing a little bit of the focus away from the fact that you're listening to a TTS voice. You're masking some of the inconsistencies in the synthesis. And if there was a dropout in the stream, well, the experience continued with music playing until it got back online. And yeah, it was fun. It was like, at the very least, I used it. And I thought, hey, you know, I'm not fixating on the voice. I'm listening to the news, or I'm listening to whatever I want to hear. The design of it made those elements invisible, and you were just taking in information.
Very cool. So I just want to move on. We'll talk a little bit about how to kind of make these systems more effective. So I just want to go kind of back to the basics to help our audience understand this. So Siri was a real person. I've seen Susan Bennett on YouTube. So I understand that, you know, you as you produce these entities need sounds to build the speech. I think I understand now that you can't have the infinite list of pre-recorded responses that you just pick from, that you will build them. How has that evolved? How, you know, a year ago, how long did someone have to go in the studio? How much did that person have to say versus what do you need now?
There have been improvements in the amount of data that might be necessary, but because of the depth of the kind of level of naturalness and expressivity that we're going after, we're still in the process of collecting a bunch of additional types of data that we weren't collecting before. So I think it's still reliant on a large amount of high quality data. Now we're seeing improvements with the technology today in many companies where small amounts of data are yielding very remarkable replications or clones of the voices that sampling and modeling. But none of those are really production ready. The standard, the old way, I would say the Siri style approach, unit selection synthesis required in the vicinity of 15 to 20 hours of runtime audio, which winds up being 10 to 12,000 utterances. They're phonemically dense or phonemically rich utterances. In other words, they contain as many of sort of the necessary elements in a given language, in this case in English, phonemically, prosodically, intonationally, that would account for just about all of the possible sort of intersections and combinations that are required to stitch together an utterances, an utterance in text-to-speech. And literally what unit selection would do would be to create a ransom note of sorts. It stitches together these utterances. It does so intelligently. It learns by using linguistic features and text normalization, all of these different pieces to understand elementally what was being done and then being able to output an utterance. The newer systems are based on an entirely different approach. They're using neural net systems. And they're basically using raw, unstructured data and learning from these observations and then providing an interpretation of what that data is. So still requiring the same amount of audio data or large amounts of high quality audio, but rather than using it to sort of reconstitute at the phonemic level and spit out a sentence that you need, it's observing this data and then saying, okay, based on these observations, here's what I think is what you're looking for, and synthesizing that utterance.
We've got a long way to go in terms of you use the term production ready. I think that's a perfect term in terms of you'll still need people in the studio to give you this rich data set to build really quality responses and voices from, which is fine, right? The question then is that will give you, and you use the term production ready. I'll just, in this, for the purpose of this question, called sophisticated. You know, we still have systems, IVR systems. We might have some simple responses that are pre-canned, and maybe some of these systems might switch to a human along the way, hopefully maybe seamlessly. What's your sense then of the applications of this, when we'll be okay to live with just basic systems versus when we'll need some of the sophisticated systems?
I think that the days of IVR are over in that they're very constrained to the domain that you're looking for at the moment. And obviously there's static recording. So if there's any change in verbiage or nomenclature or structure, anything, you need to go back and re-record that. What text-to-speech does is it offers an elastic and flexible system that will essentially generate any utterance that you need it to generate. So I think IVR as a whole, this is my opinion, is going away, because the level of sophistication and the level of naturalness and expressivity for these synthesized speech systems is far superior. Now, the idea of production ready, I mean just more some of the incredible experimental work that you're seeing come up in these research papers where they take, you know, 5 minutes of a user's data and then they've built a voice of them. That's remarkable. That's sort of the thing I'm talking about that's still not production ready. But in terms of high quality, statistically modeled or neural vocoded speech synthesis systems, those exist now, and obviously some of them are in production, but they do require a large amount of high-quality data, and they require some sophisticated processing and hardware to do that.
I do remember, and this is years now, I think it was the American Airlines voice response system, and I do remember the system going, let me get back to you. It was just trivial, but I was like, maybe it didn't know it put a smile on my face, right?
Those systems are like, so before we got really, really deep into TTS, when I first joined Nuance, the mission was to build text-to-speech, but really it was in the service of supporting our IVR enterprise platform. And so what we were building were airline and banking systems, and we built the US Airways system, and it was about humanizing that as much as possible and making sure that since we had the freedom to record these prompts and they were constrained to this particular context, you know, you could be expressive and you could be friendly and you could do everything you could to sort of make sure that that retention stayed in place for users to want to stay on the phone and feel like they're talking to somebody that's very natural and not want to hang up, getting the answers that they needed. That was as much natural speech as it was natural language understanding.
When a CEO or a startup's going to get started and they need to worry about voice, what type of team should they be putting in place?
I think you're going to need a group of machine learning specialists on hand. You're going to want to have people who can prepare this data. A lot of it will be unstructured data for use to generate voices. You're going to need linguists during the data capture, the acoustic data capture component. You're going to need conversation designers. You're going to need people. If you're a company who's interested in providing not just a platform, but services with that platform, you're going to want to have VUI writers. You're going to want to have specialists who are also focused on the voice. I say that because that is my job. I'm sort of sitting at the crossroads of VUI design, production, research and engineering. And you need somebody that's focused on the voice experience itself and the voice as the product, because that to me is the foundation to all of the work that comes, whether you're building an Amazon assistant or a phone app or an in-car system. You need people who will design those experiences, but you need people who are paying attention to the voice. And I think that the voice is the first principle here. People hear that voice, they're going to be turned off by it. They're going to want to engage with it. They're going to like how it sounds even before they've heard. They're going to like just the vocal qualities there. They're going to want to feel that this voice is trustworthy, that they can talk to it.
This is an evolution. So to me, I often think that the most important person when a company's building something is the product manager, the one that can bring together and manage and get the tech team engaged and the business team engaged and understand the end product and get the consumer needs served and really help define the product, right? That's the most important point. And I've never thought before, until you talk about somebody that has VUI skills, that the role of the product manager might evolve, or there might even be perhaps a voice product manager. The tools, is it fair to say the tools will be available through all these large companies as they are with machine? They're not going to have to build platforms. I'm talking about developing a voice application.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. Sort of evolving into some sort of voice PM role that is in charge of, you know, the idea and the strategy and the business opportunity that can then come together with the team of conversation designers and linguists as needed or engineers to build these voices on these platforms. I think that is really an evolving role, one that's become more prominent.
And I'm thinking, you know, script design, and you were talking about the ones managing the conversation. So that's someone under that voice product manager focusing just on what those scripts might look like.
If I'm thinking about what I do, it's really focusing on the voice and the persona and really focusing a large part of it on the data design. What kind of data is going into these systems? And in the past, the kind of data that went into these systems was just simply the requirement was, is this phonemically rich data that can sort of constitute any possible combination in the language? Can we feed it to the system and will it do it? The answer to that was yes. Now, our experiments have shown, or the work that I've been involved in has shown that it really, the data that you provide to these systems to learn from, to train on, or to stitch together content is really going to make the difference. It has to be, it's got to be focused on the domain or the product that system is going to be used in. So you can either look for a bunch of Wikipedia obtuse, phonemically dense Wikipedia entries that would work to sort of fulfill that requirement and get you all the pieces you need to build a voice, or you can start looking at product interactions and product dialogues and where that voice is going to be applied. Or if you're going to be making an audiobook voice, where would you gather data? You want it to be germane to the actual output. And that's a huge part of developing a more natural sounding voice.
And the underlying data, the data science team, the machine learning team has to have this learning engine to know kind of what's coming in to then recommend the right reaction that you'll get from the voice system. So there's that level of interactions as well, understanding what's coming in.
Yes. There needs to be, understanding the domain and the context that these systems would be training for. And then if there's any sort of additional information or annotation that's required for those contexts, specifically, you know, for audiobook narrations versus a chat or a talk bot, making sure that the ML people know that that's the kind of data that you're feeding these systems and that's the kind of output you're looking for.
Right. And you mentioned chatbots. And one of the things we've talked about, a lot of our principles around conversational AI has to do with what's the persona, what's your company image, how do you want to represent yourself? And that links a little bit back to the voice talent so that you're not going to generate a voice. You're probably going to hire somebody and say, this is what I want. Or maybe a couple of somebodies, a couple of different accents or voices or genders. You might have a couple of different voices, but again, a small number that tie to your corporate strategy and persona.
Yes. As a brand or as a company, you're looking to develop a relationship with users. And so you're designing this interaction agent, this companion that is going to encourage repeated usage and provide answers for their users in a way that is very simple and easy. And then you also want to make sure that the kind of experience you're delivering feels intimate, feels personalized.
Early on, when you talk about the IVR, you talked about keeping them engaged. You're talking about making someone happy. There's a different set of measures maybe the same measures that we have in a classic marketing automation system of dwell time and are they staying on your page? There'll be a different set of measures, but a whole bunch of I think there'll be an additional set of measurements in terms of satisfaction, in terms of what these systems are providing. I think we're going to have a different set of measures for people.
Certainly, was it like retention or containment, I think was the term in IVR for making sure that people stayed on the line and worked through their experience without resorting to an operator is an important feature. But yeah, I think more and more as we get into these much more interactive and much more natural human-like systems, I think people are looking to feel good about the experience that with the voices they're speaking with. I think in some ways, I think that they want to enchant the system itself. I've noticed that they want to be liked by the assistant or by the interactions as much as the other way around. They're looking to make a connection with that system much more than just like, hey, this, you know, I asked for A and I got this and I'm happy, we're done. The sense I get when you start introducing much more emotive and expressive qualities is that humans react, they respond to that. Of course they do. And they're looking for something, they probe a little more and they're looking for something else in that interaction. And I think that could be the measure by which people will sort of say, hey, you know, I was truly delighted. I was engaged with that experience.
Very cool. So we've talked a little bit about IVRs and newsreaders. Any thoughts as we look out into the future, what might be the next app that people haven't thought about? What do you think we're going to see voice?
I have been a huge proponent, and this has come with this technology of personalized speech. I think that the future is moving away from these monolithic personae that represent a brand. There's one voice. The technology has allowed us to develop a multiplicity of voices with less data, or at least much quicker than before, that are much more expressive. And I personally see a future where you can have voices that are made in your image or your friend's image or somebody you've never imagined before. And seeing those represented in text messaging or in your chat bots or talk bots, or that translate your voice into a different language when you're traveling. I think the opportunity for customization and voice generation is tremendous. And I think that's where the technology seems to be pointing. That's really where the exciting stuff is happening.
I guess somebody, if that's true, somebody could take your voice or my voice from this podcast and kind of create us. Do you think we're on the path to a new form of identity theft?
I think so. I mean, for better or worse, I see no reason why it wouldn't happen here. And that's interesting and concerning, but absolutely.
Well, technology always has two edges. As it rolls out, there's always good that comes and bad that comes from each of those things. Thinking back of the two edges, you early opened up by saying, I'm listening to this voice system and I want it to feel like it's smiling at me. And then we flipped it later in the conversation that it's talking to me and I'm smiling back at it. So I think that, you know, we are really building a new set of emotions and recognition of both sides. I think awareness of that I'm a human and that this entity is not my, is okay too. And I think companies have quite the journey to go. It should be great. I'm looking forward to where the future holds. And I know you're doing a lot to drive that. So David, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure, John. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. If you like what we're doing, we'd appreciate your telling other people about the show. Better yet, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or write a review. Doing so will really help ensure that more people can find us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Impact Podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you go to find your podcasts.